Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, it's 2013 in review. Google's got its top search term. Twitter's got its year in review. What were the top pins on Pinterest? All that and a lot more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 142, recorded Friday, December 20th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere on your TV, your PC, your smartphone, or your tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit to start your free two-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/twit. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at SAP.com/twit. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the last Social Hour of 2013. Certainly not the last Social Hour ever, but the last one of this year from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from South Florida. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Amber. How are you?
I am good. I am still in Florida. I'll be here for a few weeks and very happy to once again get away from the cold weather in Toronto and excited that we're going to talk about the best of 2013 because, as you know, all of the top social media companies put out their year in reviews and we have a few of them to go through to just to talk about some of the top trending topics and photographs and searches of this past year.
So what should we start with first? Because this is a trend that I've actually grown to look forward to, where at the end of the year, you know, Google will have, it's like, here were the top searches, and YouTube will say, here are the top videos. We talked about that a little bit last week. And you know, well, these are the most favorited tweets and that sort of thing. So where do we start?
Well, if we want to do the Google year in review, where they talk about the top global trending searches, I think that's kind of a good place, especially based on some of the topics, because as you'll notice, the top 10 trending searches involve everything from life, as far as the royal baby being born, to death, as far as Nelson Mandela passing away, to technology like the iPhone 5S, to the Harlem Shake, the Boston Marathon, North Korea, and some more technology as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this is it's not a huge surprise, but it is, you know, and we've mentioned this on recent shows that some of it is just, this was a long year. A lot happened. I kind of forgot, you know, that the Harlem Shake was still a big deal at the beginning of the year. And the royal baby, well, that was a huge story, but gosh, I haven't thought about that in a while. Yeah, I guess it says something about our attention spans, but also because we just have so much information in front of us that the stuff that ends up being in something like a top 10 is they're all big, but what really makes them so much bigger than other stories? You know, part of it is they're truly big news events, and sometimes it's just, you know, like a viral thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a mix of topics, which I think really reflects that most people are just searching for things that happen in their lives or things that are, like you mentioned, that are happening in the news. So it's, I think, a really decent mix. But like you, I forget that some of these things happened in 2013. When I think of the Harlem Shake, it feels like years and years ago.
It does.
And even the Samsung Galaxy S4, I don't know what it is, but to me, it feels like that phone has been out forever. And I just can't, you know, wrap my head around the fact that these things would potentially have been trending in 2013. But it's been a long year. I guess that's what that means.
I guess so. I guess it has been a pretty long year. What about from the Twitter side? Twitter also, I mean, this is a place where people are talking about news, at least for me, probably more than anywhere else on a single social network. How do they put together their 2013?
Yeah, they have a lot of great reports that they've put together. You can check them out on their site. And of course, we'll put a link into the show notes. Now, theirs is a little bit different. They seem to categorize things, I don't want to say better, but if you want to look at updates and trending topics over the past year, you can go and look at breaking news, government and politics, science and exploration, human interest. But then you can go into hashtags as well of different categories. So right now we're looking on the video feed at news as far as the top stories. And again, I don't think any of these will be a big surprise. When you get into entertainment and sports, there, of course, are other stories that have really topped the list as far as topics that people are chatting about. So I like the way that Twitter has put together their list. I think it's you know, a little more interesting in some ways. And I think they do a nice job of just kind of highlighting some of the tweets, especially in the news category with photos. And it's a real great overview of what people were tweeting about this past year.
Yeah, I love this. If you, even if you go up to the top, the hashtag 2013, which is organized by month. That's even more fun because, yeah, of course, you know, they're all arranged as hashtags, but this is around certain you know, timestamps versus something that was that's all sports related that would go into the sports category. But it's a really fascinating way to, yeah, just kind of get, it's like the cliff notes on the year. Mm-hmm. as it's been shared on Twitter. We see more and more on Twitter, lots of visuals, lots of photos attached to tweets that have become popular. And, you know, some of the stuff, for whatever reason, evaded me news-wise. And that's probably because nobody can keep on top of everything that's happening on Twitter. But it was a really interesting walk down memory lane. I mean, you go to April of 2013, and yes, you've got Boston Marathon. You've also got a news from the NBA. You move on to October. You've got the government shutdown. I mean, that's a crazy thing that people aren't just talking about, like, hey, here's what's happening. But then you sort of get, you get this long conversation, you get parody accounts, you've got, you know, jokes and humor and all of that stuff happens on Twitter. And the team has done a really good job of curating this. I think it's definitely a look. 2013.twitter.com if you want to click around for yourself. And as Amber mentioned, we'll put it in our show notes as well.
And I think that kind of goes to show why Twitter continues to be such a great source for news, right? I mean, just being able to compile all of the breaking news tweets and images, I mean, it's just a fabulous place to go. When we get into Facebook and talk about the year in review on Facebook, this kind of proves why maybe I'm shying away from Facebook a little bit, because I think that as far as depth in terms of topics, you see all of a sudden if you click on top global life events, and that is one of the sections in their year in review that you'll see as far as top life events. Some of the things that are the most popular things that people were talking about. And no huge surprise here, but it's all about relationships and even piercing, strangely enough.
Piercing?
I don't know if that's what it says.
Got a piercing. Wow.
To me, that kind of defines why I don't spend an enormous amount of time on Facebook.
Yeah, you know, that's funny too. You know what I've noticed, Amber, is that people have started to use Facebook and it's like they're trying to break the system. For example, a life event is supposed to be, yeah, you got engaged, you got married, you had a baby, or, you know, maybe moved, or you got a new job or something like that. And now I'm finding that some of my friends on Twitter, or on Facebook, will say things like, you know, had a burrito, ate the burrito, broke up with the burrito, you know, and they're adding it as a life event. Oh, nice. Just because the whole thing is, it's designed to be used in a certain way, but people can't help themselves from trying to, you know, kind of hack it apart a little bit. I think this is also done very well, Amber. I mean, there's lot of good information here, but yeah, it's so much more about the personal lives of people. And I think when you look at it on such a large scale, you know, some 9% of people, you know, piercings was a really big deal for them. I just kind of go like, I don't know how I can relate to this. I don't know how this sort of like furthers my life and my interests.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook even goes in as you click through the slides. It's almost like a number of slides. And as you go to the right, it even has check-ins around the world, the most popular places where people checked in on Facebook, most talked about topics. And it goes to show you, I think, how some of these technology companies are going so much further with the year in review. And I think about the early days of Google, Sarah, and you probably remember this, where they'd have like 10 search words and that would be it. You know, you'd get in. Mm-hmm. It would be a blog post, right? And now all of a sudden we have infographics and definitely more detailed information. And it also goes to show you the popularity of just people being able to use data to be able to track more things and present it in a way that's more visually interesting. And so it's fun to kind of poke through some of the different highlights in these reports.
I like it. There's also your personal best of Twitter. I don't know why I keep saying Twitter. Facebook that they put together that pretty much pulls from just your updates. And it has a lot to do with how much interaction, how many likes you got or comments you got on a particular update. You know, mine is a combination of stuff, the photos that I've posted. I posted on Facebook back in March. I had forgotten all about this. I told the world that I started eating meat again. Because I, you know, at the time it was a really big deal. It should have been a life event. That would have been funnier. Now I know. But, you know, I got a lot of likes on that. So that's surfacing. And, you know, it's if you're active on Facebook, something like this ends up being really helpful. Because you kind of go like, oh, yeah, look at that. Oh, it was really the best of. Oh, look, there was somebody's birthday and I remember that picture. But if you're not, I think, I don't know. I mean, you may only post on Facebook enough to put together 12 updates, and so I don't know that they would be as interesting. I do quite a bit of interaction on Facebook.
Yeah, I interact a decent amount, but I tend to be a bit of a lurker. I don't think I maybe comment as much as I could, but I kind of poke in there and I poke out. And I think one of the problems is with me with Facebook right now is just that I have not really stopped the number of people who I'm friends with at any point. So it just kind of goes on forever and ever. So there's so many people I just don't know. So you can imagine they're posting stuff that's totally not relevant to me whatsoever. I have no idea who the people are. So it's almost like walking into a bar where you don't know anyone. That's kind of like my Facebook experience, whereas I'm sure people have been smarter about the way that they have invited people into their network, because for me it's like the Wild West in there. There's some ugly stuff, Sarah, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, facebookstories.com. See what the big stories were of the year, and definitely check out yours as well. It's kind of cool. Facebook they never really lay out, you know, Amber, when you look at your personal feed, and over on the left-hand side, it'll be like, here, you know, you have 549 friends. And then you'll see the little grid of nine people. And I've always wondered, okay, well, why are those specific nine people being shown to me right now? And I can tell that it has something to do with interaction. I'm not ever seeing a friend from high school that I added on Facebook 4 years ago and never, ever talked to. Those people never surface. It's people that you interact with, and I'm not exactly sure how the algorithm picks those people. It's probably complicated, and somebody at Facebook should be able to explain that to me. Maybe it's a secret. But that's all kind of fascinating, too, the way that that all plays into what ends up being the top moments. It's not just, you know, it's really not a singular thing. It's how you're connected to people and what they're sharing and how you know each other and how many friends you have in common. It's very complicated.
It is complicated. And just when you think that there aren't any more of these year in reviews, then you all of a sudden find out that even Pinterest has gotten into the game as far as some of the top pinned items. And I'm probably most interested in this just because I've started to use Pinterest more and I feel as though I'm really kind of a novice in the Pinterest world, Sarah. And when I see some of these images and see some of the top pins that are generating attention on Pinterest, it makes me realize that I have a lot of work to do because there's some beautiful images on here.
I love this. I do. Pinterest forever. Look at this car. I mean, this is great. Yep. I think this is also, again, more and more of these end up being more and more helpful as just it's a very good use case for people who might be on the fence about Pinterest and say, oh, Pinterest is just for knitters. Or I just made that up. I tried to pick something weird. But not that knitting is weird. Pinterest is just for girls. Or Pinterest is just for people planning a wedding or a home improvement project. It is all of those things. But it doesn't, you know, you can collect photos and images of your favorite tattoos for inspiration. I actually have a friend who's trying to figure out what he's going to get for his very first tattoo. He's really excited about it. And this is the perfect... this is the perfect service for something like that. You know, you just want to scrapbook a bunch of things together. But it doesn't even have to be a project. It can be things that you like, things that make you happy, stuff that you find online.
The one thing that surprises me the most about Pinterest, and I'm sure other people have felt the same way in terms of things that you may discover when you go to the tasty recipes section as far as the top pinned items, and you check out some of the recipes that have made the list of the most popular pins of 2013. That's actually how I'm using Pinterest more and more, is just discover interesting food recipes. And there's some neat stuff here. And you see so many people, you know, you just discover things you would never imagine, like hash brown cups. What is this? Like, people just being so creative. Buffalo chicken beer cheese dip. I mean, I never think of these things, Sarah, but obviously others do.
I know. It's so, I mean, it is quite the rabbit hole Pinterest is these days, because it's just, there are so many users. You really get a sense that people have varying interests. Some are very specific, as you mentioned. A lot of food-based stuff, which I think is great. When I'm searching recipes, I want to see a picture of this beautiful souffle that I'm about to undertake the recipe for, front and center, for sure. And it's nice to see what, you know, a curated bunch of Pinterest boards that people have put together that not only might be helpful and relate to your interests, but just gives you a sense of, oh, yeah, that's a really cool idea. I could use Pinterest for that. Or I'd like to follow this person. They obviously have really good taste, and so on.
If you're hungry, though, I wouldn't go over to Pinterest, because there is way too much food. It looks absolutely delicious. And I just went down a rabbit hole of cupcakes, and it's pretty good looking, I have to say. But yeah, I mean, I think it's helpful for people who are trying to figure out how to use Pinterest in a more interesting way. Maybe you are trying to gain some traction on Pinterest as far as creating your own boards. And then you look at some of these items and you just get a sense of what's kind of working on Pinterest. And it's fun. I mean, just because it's so visual, right? I mean, it's different than the others in the sense that you just sort of scan over and you know, you do feel that level of inspiration, like, oh, I could do this, even if you have no skills in the kitchen, like I don't at all.
None?
Not really. Not so much.
You need, yeah, well, the recipes are all on Pinterest.
It's true. I recently went there and I found a recipe and I actually made it, and I keep telling every single person I know about it, because I felt like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Whoever thought of this? And it's one of those things where I would never have found that if I didn't start hanging around on Pinterest more. So I'm sure a lot of people have that experience on Pinterest, or they just found that one thing that's so kind of creative that they haven't seen anywhere else. And then it hooks them from there on in.
Hooked me. Took a while. Took a couple years. But I became hooked earlier this year because I was looking for the perfect dining chairs for my old crappy table. I don't even know. And I became obsessed with home, beautiful, not just dining rooms, but beautiful stuff as displayed on Pinterest, specifically on Pinterest. I know I could look other places, but I still do that for fun. Sometimes I have a spare hour and it's like, all I want to do is go down a Pinterest rabbit hole.
Yep.
And I do, and I love it. And then it turns into 4 hours.
I know the feeling. And then we get to social media hoaxes of the year. And there are quite a few in this list on Mashable. In fact, they have come up with, I think, about 9 of them, of hoaxes that we have fallen for across social media. And it's not just us, but also journalists who have fallen for some of these hoaxes. We're looking at the gas station karaoke couple. I feel like I missed this one entirely.
Me too.
So there's a
what
few
happened?
Like that. I'm not sure. Let's just look at the little write-up here. So they captured our hearts in May while singing karaoke at a gas station. The bit was part of the Tonight Show with Jay Leno's Pumpcast News segment, which features a live news anchor on a TV above a gas station who interacts with customers. The duo agreed to sing a few rounds of karaoke, and the clip went viral thanks to the enthusiasm and their strong vocal skills. But it was later discovered that Will and Monifa were both trained actors.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's the funny thing, is like everything that's done well enough always ends up being fake these days, so that then you don't really know what's real anymore. That football player's fake girlfriend story is still difficult to understand. He had a girlfriend that he never met that ended up not being real at all.
That one is just weird.
I mean, it's like, how do you even do that?
Well, and number four is a letter to Santa story with the Amazon link. And this was supposedly an adorable kid's letter to Santa that got a lot of attention online. Instead of telling Santa the name of the toy he wanted, the letter contained a long Amazon link. And it turned out that this was just part of a joke that a comedian had decided to play. And it wasn't, in fact, a child at all. But I fell for that one. I thought it was really cute. You know what? I kind of hate these stories, because I feel like it takes away from some of the goodness that you find online and some of the positive stories that come out there. But nonetheless, along with the hoaxes, we also have influential stories too that are more positive in nature, I think.
Yeah, the hoax. Oh yeah, that one was very fake, where the girl catches on fire because she's twerking upside down. Anybody who's listening to the audio version of the show is probably legitimately confused. It's just a, you know, best of 2013 always ends up being pretty visual. But yeah, hoaxes. The problem is, Amber, is like, if you, for example, you said the Amazon letter, you thought it was really cute. I did too. I thought, oh, that's kind of adorable.
So cute.
Yeah, you know, it's kids. They're so literal about everything. And it ends up being a hoax, and then you go, oh, well, that's dumb. I mean, I felt very down and out when I found out that Horse eBooks was an art project. That happened a few months ago, right? And that was a Twitter account that was supposed to be like a bot that was nonsensical, and it was actually a person putting together some, I don't even know what kind of art project that is, but I was so mad. I wasn't like I went, ah, you got me. That was so clever. I was just mad.
No, it's not funny, is it, Sarah?
Right. No, it's not.
It just makes you angry.
You feel duped.
Okay, so let's go to something positive.
All right.
Okay, so let's go to some of the most influential social media marketing campaigns of the year, and these are a little more heartwarming. We already talked about the top one that they have on the list, the WestJet Airlines Christmas Miracle, of course, that I think we mentioned on our last episode about how WestJet went and bought a plane load of people Christmas gifts, and that was very fun. And probably my all-time favorite, Sarah, was Bat Kid Saves San Francisco, and I think we were live on the show when that was all happening.
Yeah, that was actually, well, whenever that was, it was fairly recently. That's right, Bat Kid had started his whole campaign to save the city of San Francisco. Of course, the real kid, Miles, I think his name was sort of a winner of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. His wish was to be Batman for a day, and it was quite an affair. I mean, living in San Francisco, it was probably more exciting just, you know, to live there, because there was a lot of media coverage. There were helicopters flying over my house. There was basically a Bat Kid parade. He got a key to the city at City Hall.
Amazing.
I mean, it was quite an event, to the point where then there was even Bat Kid backlash from people saying, well, shouldn't this money be better spent on actual cancer research type of thing? And we, you know, I don't know. I don't necessarily need to get into that conversation. Oh, yeah, I was home. That's right. I was doing the show from my house. And the helicopters, because I live really close to City Hall, were like crazy.
It was really
overhead.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that was happening live. That was so fun.
That was really fun. I think, too, one story that probably had the biggest impact on how people approach social media marketing in 2013 was definitely number six on this list, which is the Oreos Super Bowl tweet. If you remember, they came up with that campaign literally within minutes when the lights went out during the Super Bowl, and they came up with the ad that says, you can still dunk in the dark.
Oh, yeah.
And many people credit Oreo to coming up with real-time social media marketing. So the idea that you're reacting on the ground and you're coming up with campaigns within minutes, depending on what's actually happening in real time. And that was a big shift, I think, in social media marketing that just happened this year.
That was one of those. It was kind of, I feel like a lot of people working in advertising had an aha moment at that point, because not only was it just very clever, hey, you got a power outage, that's weird, what's happening? And then Oreos jumps on that. The tweet gets a lot of attention. It's shared a million times. And then it turns into, oh, interesting. So potential customers really want us to be clever. That doesn't always happen. But I think that more than ever, advertisers realize that it's not just about getting in front of everybody. It's about being clever and feeling like they understand social media tools well enough to get kudos from customers.
Yeah, and just reacting so quickly. And I think that was probably one of the, it's not really that interesting, but it definitely was memorable for me this year as far as social media marketing campaigns between that and WestJet. I think those are two that I can definitely remember. But even the Oreo cookie, you could have told me that happened 3 years ago and I probably would have believed you. It seems like eons ago. I can't believe it was still in 2013.
I know. No kidding. No kidding. All right. Well, I don't know. What do you think? We've done pretty good coverage of some of the best roundups of the big social networks. We got Twitter, we got Facebook, we got Pinterest. Certainly, hoaxes. The hoaxes will never die. And then good social media marketing campaigns. Marketing campaigns. Sometimes they really impress us. So yeah, kudos to everybody. It's been a great year, 2013. More social than ever, and I have a feeling that curve will just continue to go up next year, 2014. What's in store for us? We don't even know. Yeah. I suppose we could make some predictions, Amber. Maybe we'd do that a little later in the show. Quick reminder that this is episode 142. We're actually recording this a little bit earlier than we normally would because Amber and I are going to take next Friday off. A couple days after the Christmas holiday, and so we're going to have a nice quiet week. So we're doing this show a little bit early. The first week of January, January 3rd, will be our last show that we record live on Fridays. After that, we will move to our new time on Thursdays, so that's the second week of January. Amber and I will now record the show live on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. So do mark your calendars, and hopefully you can join us at our new day and time if you like to watch the show live. You can see a little bit more behind the scenes of what happens in between episodes. And Amber sometimes has meltdowns. We always take that out of the edited version of the show.
I do. Yeah. Big meltdowns. During the live show, I just start to cry. I'm just
throwing things. Very diva. Diva behavior. It's tough to work with Amber.
I'm like, switch to me, Brian. Switch to me.
Yeah. Sarah's talking too much. You're trying to sabotage the Skype connection. That was you the whole time. But do make a note of it. But obviously, if you can't watch us live, the majority of people don't watch or listen live. They watch us on demand. twit.tv/TSH is where all of our show notes live. All of the articles that we mention or stories that we talk about, we have all of the links there. Every episode of ours, episode 136, is when we talked about Doge for the first time. It was a wonderful episode. It'll always have a special place in my heart. Brian just wants to talk about this because he made that infographic and he's still super proud of himself. And he thinks he's so funny. It's pretty good.
It's pretty funny.
It's pretty good. I'll give him that. That's at twit.tv/TSH. And if you haven't subscribed to the show and you just want it to download automatically, you can add it to your favorite podcast, catcher, or viewer, iTunes, any of that. All of those links are at twit.tv/TSH as well. Boy, we're coming to that last day before a long week off, and I just got to hold on.
Hold on, Sarah.
I will. All right, before we move on to some of our newsworthy stories, a social tip, let's take a moment to thank Hulu Plus for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. I love Hulu Plus because it keeps me from having to think too much about what channel is that show I like on, or what's new, or... oh, it's Friday, and I have to pay attention to, because I don't have a DVR, and it's like, if I'm making food in the kitchen, then I'm kind of watching TV at the same time, running back and forth. That's the beauty about Hulu Plus. It's a lot of my favorite shows that I just watch on demand when I feel like it. Not only can I watch on my TV, I've got a Hulu app on my Apple TV or my Roku player, but I can also watch on the go, on my computer, on my iPad, on my iPhone. Hulu Plus, you can watch on tablets, on the go. It's great. It's wonderful that way. Hulu Plus lets you watch thousands of TV shows and movies, not just TV shows, but movies, not only in your living room or wherever you may be. You can watch shows like Jimmy Kimmel Live or Family Guy or my favorite, Saturday Night Live. I don't care what anybody says. I know Saturday Night Live isn't always funny anymore, but I still like it. It's my weekly tradition. But I don't watch it Saturday night live. I watch it Sunday morning when I feel like it. I've got my coffee. I've got my, you know, it's a whole little experience that I create for myself. I don't have to save it anywhere. It's just on Hulu Plus. It's great. You can watch episodes of shows like Lost. Lost isn't airing any new episodes anymore, but it was a great series. Did you watch it? Hulu Plus is a great way to binge watch something like that. Doctor Who is a big hot topic now. You want to talk to your friends who watch Doctor Who? Get caught up and use Hulu Plus to do that. They also have exclusive content like The Wrong Man's Behind the Mask. It's all about mascots. A new docu-series that takes you into the world of people who actually are the mascots for a variety of sports teams. Yeah, I know. Kind of cool, huh? And you get an access to a collection of ad-free movies and kids' content as well. Amber, I know that's one of the things that you look for in on-demand content is stuff that's good for kids.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, it's amazing because they don't want to wait for anything to start, Sarah, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yeah.
Especially if my little guy's almost five, so he's used to a world where he can just tap and watch whatever he wants, and there is no way he is going to wait for something to come on within, you know, 30 minutes or an hour. He wants what he wants when he wants it, and that's that generation, and I don't think that's going to change.
Exactly. For $7.99 per month, you can catch up on all those current shows. You can binge old favorites, catch a great movie, stream as many TV shows and movies as you want. That's another thing, too. It's, you know, it's not like you've got, you know, some sort of an hour limit. Nope. If you're paying for Hulu Plus, you can watch how much you want in a particular month. You can try Hulu Plus free, though. Free for 2 weeks. Watch as much stuff as you. I mean, you can get through, like, if you want to be crazy about it, you can get through a few series in a couple of weeks. Just go to HuluPlus.com/twit. There's a special offer for our viewers and listeners. Make sure to use HuluPlus.com/twit. You'll get an extended free trial, and then they'll know that we sent you. And then Hulu Plus says, hey, Twit is awesome, and everybody wins. Thanks to Hulu Plus for their support of The Social Hour and Twit, and we hope you all enjoy watching instant content, shows, movies, old series, new stuff, exclusive content on Hulu Plus. All right, Amber, let's move on to our social tip of the week. And we haven't talked about Instagram yet on this show, and I'm excited.
I know. This is kind of a fun little chart that I found from a company called Track Maven. And what they've done is they've come up with the effectiveness of certain types of filters on Instagram and talking about the reach as far as the type of filter that you use. Now, the interesting thing when you look at this chart, you see they've separated into percentage of usage and average interaction per 1,000 followers. So you can gauge, for example, that as far as interactions, the Mayfair filter has the most interactions, although it's still a relatively small percentage of people on Instagram who use that filter. And then the list of all the filters kind of goes down from there. So I thought it was kind of neat. You know, people struggle with what type of filters to add. And I guess if you wanted to see which ones are getting the most comments and interactions, this would be a great place to start. I'm not sure you want to follow everything that they say here, but just to give you an idea of what's kind of working.
The folks over at Buffer App are... They've got all sorts of good data.
I
subscribe to their email newsletter, and mm-hmm. You know, email newsletters for the most part are annoying to me. And you know, it's like, I didn't sign up for this. How do I unsubscribe? But there are a few that I really like. I'm always happy to see them in my inbox, and the folks over at Buffer are one of those companies because they just have so much good internet data, and they it's a joy to read. Probably especially because of our line of work, but. Yeah.
It's fun. I mean, all these stats and all these graphs. I mean, it, for a lot of people, okay, maybe you don't really care because you don't care about how much people are interacting. But I think more and more, especially for entrepreneurs, and I know there are people who watch this show who are, or listen to the show who are trying to build up their own personal brand. And this information is important, you know, just to have a sense of kind of what people are doing and to be able to see that in one place. And I think you're exactly right. They, at Buffer App, they have a ton of great information. And you really get into this area of social media that some people call social media. media science, and you may hate that term, but really what they're just doing is they're taking all of the data available and putting it into charts and graphs that we understand, so we have a sense how to do it all better. So I'm all for that, and it's fun just to get little tidbits of facts here and there.
Isn't it weird that of all the filters, when you look at them on this graph, that no filter, as in, you know, something that's hashtagged no filter, is so high? It makes you wonder how many people, you know, it's like the whole thing of no filter, the point of that hashtag is that you're proud that the photo is so good that it needs no filter at all. However, I have found here and there that I think that people are fibbing a little bit when they say no filter.
The no filter fibbers. Are you a no filter fibber? But I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, some of the no filter images look too good to be true. I know quite a few people who take their photos into maybe Camera Plus or another editing program, and then they put them into Instagram and then obviously don't add another filter. So I think you're right. There are quite a few of those people out there.
Amber, did I ever admit to you that I tried to start a new thing because I thought no filter was overused and kind of dumb? So I tried to get filter-free to be trending. It didn't work. Nobody did it except me. I don't know. I'm not very good at getting, like, hashtag bandwagon started, but that is something that I tried to do back in the day because I think I abandoned it partly because it didn't really get any traction, and also because I was like, no, actually, I like my filtered images better. That's sort of the point of Instagram.
It is.
For me, anyway, most of the time.
I think everything looks great with a filter, which is why, Sarah, we have not created our invention yet, but we have talked about filters for Skype, because right now I can think of a lot of filters I could add to my Skype video feed that would make it look better, and we still don't have that ability. One day we're gonna be rich kids of Instagram.
Indeed. Speaking of rich kids of Instagram, guess what's happening to the rich kids of Instagram? That was a very nice filter on you, by the way.
It was.
The rich kids of Instagram are going into print. Yes, rich kids of Instagram is being made into a book. Now, what's kind of funny about this whole thing is rich kids of Instagram is the whole idea of highlighting kids who are flaunting their wealth via Instagram photo uploads. But it's actually a Tumblr blog that's so popular. I'm a follower of Rich Kids of Instagram because I think it's pretty funny. The whole idea is, you know, the latest update was from today, and it's a very expensive receipt that totals $48,982. Let's see, what was the most expensive thing that was bought? A $23,000... I don't even know what that is. Oh, it must be something alcohol.
I think
related.
It's champagne. I mean, I think this is a restaurant receipt because they do have a 20% tip line item at the bottom. And they have Grey Goose on here.
Right. I mean, some of the stuff you have to wonder, you know, I mean, how much of it is real? It's all pretty much just fun and games. But yeah, you know, fancy parties, fancy homes, fancy selfies. In a spa near some sort of a beautiful beach, fancy yachts, and so on. It's very silly, and I get a good laugh out of it. So what do you think? Is this just another way to get a few dollars out of consumers? Amber, do you think that Rich Kids of Instagram is a funny enough meme or good idea that it's bound for coffee tables everywhere?
I do. I think I don't know if I would necessarily buy it, but I do think that it will do okay. And I mean, it reminds me a little bit of Dear Photograph. We've had Taylor on the show before, and he did very well with that blog where he got people comparing an old photograph where they were in a certain location, and then they went back to that location and took a picture with the original photograph. And I have that book at home. So it is a great coffee table book. So I think anyone who appreciates social media culture would like this. And I think it has turned into more of a joke, and at least I want to believe it has, because if I think those people are actually doing that, then I'm totally mortified.
Yeah, it is. It is very cringe-worthy.
Kind of disgusting. Yeah.
Dear Photograph, however, I mean, that's
very cool.
Wonderful. I mean, I love Dear Photograph. It's so good. It's, you know, if you don't know the concept, you haven't heard us talk about it on the show in the past, it's the whole idea of a photograph from a place, and then you stand in the same place. Which may look pretty much the same, and try to line it up so you get the sense of, oh, that's what was happening here a long time ago. And some of the stories are really poignant. Sometimes they're sad, nostalgic, and it's just, it's such a good idea. I still wish I had thought of something like this, but
it's a great idea.
It really is.
A little trip down memory lane. So, yeah. Like I said, I have the book at home and I absolutely love it. And we've had Taylor on the show. I don't remember what episode, but you can check that out because I believe he did come on the Social Hour when he first came out with his book. So that was, I think he's done pretty well with that. And now a whole other category of coffee table books with rich kids of Instagram. Very disturbing.
Yep. It's just disturbing.
But fun, I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. I have mixed feelings about this next story, but I think that we should talk about it because it's such a big social gaffe of the week. And like I said, we are recording the show a little bit earlier. It's going to run next week, but we're recording it a few days in advance. So there may be some updates to this story by the time you may be watching the show. But as it stands now, a PR executive who works for IAC, who is the parent company of College Humor, I'm having a senior moment of all the other companies that IAC is in charge of. It'll come to me in a second. Anyway, she's, you know, a prominent person who works there, tweeted that she was getting on a plane and she was headed to Africa and that she hoped she didn't get AIDS, but that she wouldn't because she's white.
Sarah, the tweet's still up.
I know. And apparently, Valleywag got an update from IAC that said, this is outrageous and offensive. We cannot get a hold of this employee because she is in an airplane and not available to be contacted. So no one really knows what happened. Now, here's the thing. And this is, again, you can't jump to conclusions because, oh my gosh, what if somebody got into her account and she was hacked and this was something that was tweeted on her behalf and she's going to be mortified and the whole thing when she finds out what happens. But if you go back in time to some of these tweets, people are starting to say, well, she did tweet this other thing that was not as offensive, but still a little like, oh, you know, a little borderline for somebody who has a prominent position at a company, especially in the world of PR. My goodness. So, Amber, I mean, what happens at this point? Because if she says that wasn't me, well, then there has to be some pretty lengthy explanation of what happened. If it was her, does she lose her job? I mean, in this day and age, it seems like you say one bad thing, and eventually, if you have enough angry people talking about it, you lose your job.
I know. Well, I mean, she's not helping the case with the fact that her Twitter bio says the name of the organization says IAC in it. So corporate communications at IAC. So she's automatically identifying herself as part of that company. Then she says troublemaker on the side, also known for my loud laugh. So based on reading the bio, I'm not sure if she didn't write this, if people are ever going to believe her. So it may be a tough run, but honestly, what is she thinking?
I don't know. You know, a couple people in chat say, you know, even if this was a case of very bad judgment, you could always say, oh, that wasn't me, and invent a story. You know, I feel like that probably happens effectively from time to time. But more and more often, it's like everyone's a little hip to that game, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that tweet was geolocated from an airport using a Twitter app that's, you know, there's a lot of data that can be like, okay, well, where was that person then, you know, that hacked your phone? Sitting next to you on the airplane, you know, kind of thing. So it's harder and harder to just sort of pass it off as, oh, yeah, you know, I was hacked. I wouldn't say anything like that because you feel stupid later. I guess it's just, you know, one more extremely good example of why you should not be an idiot on social media because it will come back to bite you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially if you're in a position like that where, you know, people are going to see it and, yeah, totally inappropriate. It's one of those things. I'm sure she'll end up denying it, but I'm not sure people will let her necessarily get away with that one. So,
yeah,
that's definitely a social media gaffe and not the first one.
Not the first one
on the show.
Won't be the last. And really, I guess on the other side of it, you know, you want to be like be careful. Maybe this is a really great way to remind people to be really careful about passwords, because if somebody really did want to ruin your career, this would be the way to do it. Because for anybody who's familiar with the company is going to remember something like this. And we all know that sometimes memories can be a little Swiss cheesy. So it's not as if everyone remembers that she was done wrong. It's that she tweeted something very inappropriate. So you want to, you know, make sure that you're really in control of your own accounts and nobody has access to do anything that's going to make you look bad, put words in your mouth, and so on.
Definitely. Keep
those
wise
passwords
advice.
Locked down, yes. We do want to hear from all of you. Some of you send us really good examples of social media gaffes, great examples of people doing good on social media. You have topic ideas for us. You have guest ideas, people that you want to see on the show. In our last episode, Nick Bilton, who wrote Hatching Twitter, was our guest. We had a little technical issues with him, so we decided, hey, well, we'll make this interview into a two-parter. So we talked to him for a few minutes in last episode, and we will have him in the new year, in 2014, to talk a little bit more about the history of Twitter and the future of Twitter, the TV show. Oh, my goodness.
Can't wait for that.
I know. I can't wait either. But you can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. If you like emailing, that's fine. If you want to leave us a voicemail, the number is 2626-SOCIAL. Amber and I more and more find that we're getting good real-time feedback from all of you while we record the show live and after the fact on Twitter as well. So that's a great way to be able to send along good ideas for us. Obviously, we're both on Facebook, Google+, pretty much anywhere you might be able to share stuff. Amber and I are lurking somewhere, so it's always easy to help us make our show each week.
You can always find us somewhere online, that's for sure. And actually, we have been getting a lot of great tweets and suggestions of stories to include. And it's great, especially if you do include some of the social media gaffes, because we know they're happening so often and they're always so interesting to talk about. So we can learn from mistakes of others.
Exactly. All right, before we get to our rad or fad this week, let's take a moment to thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Social media solutions from SAP is a great little tool. In fact, it's a pretty robust tool. If you work in social media and you want to improve your customer service and support process, of course you do. Why wouldn't you? That's your job. Conversations about brands are happening all over social media. So how do you do it? How do you keep control? How do you improve customer service based on people complaining about your product because they're confused or they need help? Well, Social Media Solutions has two components, listening and engaging. The listening component is all about figuring out who's talking about your brand. What are they saying? Are they happy? Are they sad? Where are they posting these things? Who else is reading what they're posting? Are they a prominent blogger? Are they on some sort of a Twitter account? Is this on some sort of a review site? This is hard to keep control of. That's why Social Media Solutions has a systematic process for identifying who's talking about your brand and how you can make them a happy customer if they're having a problem, if they're confused, how you can make them a customer if they seem to be on the fence about buying something. You know, those ready-to-buy customers have certain identifiers, and Social Media Solutions can do that for you, make your job easier, helps you do your job better, and also helps you build better products, because real-time customer feedback helps you make the next iteration of your app or your product or what somebody's buying on Amazon or anything in between better, because you are rapidly responding to what works and doesn't work. It uses natural language processing. It's like big data to know the difference between, you know, if somebody's happy or sad, or there's a whole sentiment portion of this, and if they're confused, you can reach out to them. That's actually the engaging component, is the reaching out. You've listened. You know what people are saying. You have a pretty good sense of how your product is doing based on what's being talked about online. But then you want to help. If somebody tweets out a technical support problem, you want to make sure it's routed to the person on your team who's got the answer. that person gets back to the customer right away, and it's like, wow, you guys are on top of it. That's awesome. You can solve customer problems. You can respond to customer feedback. Of course, you drive sales that way because you're helpful, and you prove to them that you're listening. That's the best part about engaging, is saying, hey, we're listening to you, and we want to help. Social Media Solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing by improving the customer service and support experience. If you're interested in taking it for a whirl, go to sap.com/twit. It's a guided tour there. Gives you a lot more information about, oh, okay, this is how I could use this in my social media efforts, where whether you're at a big company or a small company or medium-sized company, they're waiting for you. Look, they've got their little page at sap.com/twit. Amber and my faces are there, so you'll know you're in the right place. Yeah, and you can download a 5-step plan for social media in the enterprise, sap.com/twit. And thanks to SAP, as always, for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, it's Rad or Fad time, Amber, and I, for one, am excited because it has to do with sweaters.
I know you like sweaters, but would you like an LED mood sweater? So you would wear this sweater, and it would be attached to some wires that would go around your hands, and they would sense what type of mood you're in, Sarah. And based on the type of mood that you're in, there would be glowing colors around the neckline of your sweater. So I don't even know what to say. It's a San Francisco company, so it's kind of your town we have to blame for this.
Oh, my gosh. I have more and more things to blame San Francisco for these days.
So there are 5 light colors to indicate tranquil, calm. The list of different emotions goes on and on. And there's red as well if you're nervous or in love. And it's just one of those things. You know, wearable technology has really taken off. And I know a lot of investors are very excited about this. But I have to say that we've had so many rad or fads on the show, and it makes me less inclined to believe that wearable tech is anywhere in our near future based on products like this.
Looks like we've got some pre-roll ads on that particular video, so hopefully we can check it out in a second. Brian, thanks for working on it. I don't really like mood things. It's like the modern day mood ring, which is sort of still, well, mood rings are not really anything to do with moods, but LED mood sweater, I don't know. I don't think I need anybody necessarily outwardly knowing how I feel on the inside. Maybe I'm trying to just get through the day.
It's just so bizarre. So anyway, there is a limited edition of these sweaters. There are about 100 that are available for pre-order. There are no details yet on the price. And, you know, to me, this seems more like a research project than an actual product for a consumer market. So I'm not even sure. I mean, maybe if I was into the rave scene, Sarah, I might use this.
Yeah, that'd be great. Like, I'm not having a good time at this rave. My sweater is so blue.
But then they would all glow red, perhaps.
Yeah. I don't know. It's too much. It's like wearing something, you know, across your forehead that says bad mood or super giddy or so. You know, it's like, ugh, gosh, who? Too much information.
It's too much. And that's where I think with wearable technology, I mean, unless it's really useful and it's something that you are able to, it makes you more productive, then I just don't see it. I mean, I like the idea. It's a sexy term, but when we're seeing things go into play like this or Kickstarter campaigns where I've seen wearable tech, I am less and less a believer. So I'm going to have to give this a big fat fad.
Yes.
This is a fad.
I do not want to literally wear my mood on my sleeve. No, thank you. And I'm never, by the way, I'm never tranquil and zen. That looks like Twitter blue to me a little bit. So why do I want to tell people, you know, just that much more that I'm, you know, nervous and ruffled all the time? Nah, I'm just kidding. I think I am zen sometimes.
More importantly, why would you want wires coming out of your armpits?
You're right. Yeah. It also assumes that anybody cares. I mean, if you know me, we can talk about how I feel. If
That's
you're walking
Twitter
down the street,
for, right?
passing me, how does that help anybody? It's kind of, you know, it's
have...
kind of conceptual stuff, but still, I say it's fad and not even a very cool one. It's just weird.
If you want to tell people how you feel, you just have to go on Twitter or Facebook. It's that easy.
Exactly.
You don't need a big collared sweater with glowing light so you look like E.T.'s weird cousin. It's very strange.
Yeah. Yeah, just complain on Twitter like everybody else.
Yeah.
and just Facebook. Tell us how you feel. Sure.
Somebody, it's all good.
Somebody said if you're biking at night, it could be kind of helpful. Yeah, it's good for safety. I don't know if it's so good about telling people what mood you're in, but it, you know, they point you out in a crowd. That's for
I'm going
to sure.
go out on a limb and say that you can probably get a less expensive light if you want to be safe on the road than what this will potentially cost, because I'm guessing it's not cheap. And then there are those wires that you could get tangled up in, so you could have a bike accident even though you're well lit.
This is a terrible idea the more we talk this through. Thank goodness they have Amber and me to say, hold on a second. Is this
what
really
are you
rad?
Doing?
You're going to hurt yourself on your bike. You've got wires coming out of your armpits. It's a bad fad. A fad that's bad.
It is. Go do some charity work or something.
Yeah. Jeez.
Stop wasting your time on this sweater.
Right. Yeah. Thank goodness you have us. No, we're just kidding. This is always fun. I think it's two solid fads from us.
It is.
The LED hood sweater, not ready for prime time.
Oh, yeah. And let us know if you guys have products like this you want to see if we think it's rad or fad. And we had a run there of some pretty cool rads, but this was a pretty strong fad, I think, to top off one of our guest last show of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. It is the last show of the year, Amber. I mean, is there anything that you're coming away from 2013 with? Anything that really stands out to you? Like, God, social media really took a turn this year. I mean, I guess for me, the fact that Twitter is now a public company, I mean, I can't say I was all that surprised, but that felt like a really big deal to me just because I've been very enthusiastic about Twitter since day one, and it's changed so much, but it still remains a very crucial part of my life, and it's still so weird to me that I have so many friends that have never looked at Twitter and still don't really have any interest in being a part of the conversation there. That's a standout moment for me.
Yeah, I think for me, it's probably just the conversation around images and the importance that images are playing in the social media world. And I know it's not really that new. I mean, it's not like it's exclusive to 2013, but I think we've seen with services out there like Pinterest that have really taken off that it is all about image-based social media. I mean, that's what advertisers are interested in. That's what consumers are interested in. And I think that at the end of the day, we're just going to see more of that. And I think video will come into its own in 2014, and I think more people will get better at creating great videos and maybe, you know, micro videos, but maybe even longer length videos, longer than 6 seconds.
Yeah, 6 second videos, huh? Hey, you know, we didn't even have this in our lineup, but what do you think about Vine adding vanity URLs? That's something that has rolled out to people who have better verified Twitter accounts. You and I both do, because, of course, Vine is owned by Twitter. And everybody else, I think, is allowed to start reserving their names on the 23rd. And by the time you watch this, it may be already happened and you might already have yours. But I feel like it's, you know, the first step in Vine being, you know, right now when people share something to Vine, Amber, it's like it's a standalone permalink page and you're watching a looping video and you kind of go, oh, okay. But there's no real there. There's no profile really to click on and no place to interact with the person who shared the Vine video. So I have to assume that this is just the first step in what Instagram has done really effectively, which is bring the Instagram experience to the web, not for uploading, but for liking and commenting and viewing other people's profiles. Do you think it's going to help Vine's user adoption rate?
I think it might help a little bit. I mean, I think people love that idea that they can personalize their own space online within a social network. So I think that it's nice as a destination for people to be able to go and just follow you at your specific name on Vine. So I don't know if it will change and make me use Vine. My issue has always been that, you know, I'm not always ready to just shoot little quick videos. And 6 seconds, as easy as it sounds, I think is sometimes more of a challenge. And you need to be very concise and have something interesting to say. And the most successful Vines I've seen are Vines from big marketers like Best Buy, who did that College Cuisine Vine where they showed you how to make a grilled cheese sandwich with an iron. And, you know, that was not a cheap or spontaneous project. That would have been something they probably thought about a little bit longer. So I think people think, oh, to get shorter videos, it actually is easier, but I think it's more difficult. So I'm still not there yet. I'm not vining yet.
Yeah. I'm I've Vined a few times. I mean, I've got an account. I never go there, though. I rarely look at my feed. It's just, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, and you and I have our favorites, and everyone yeah. knows what they are. But
exactly.
But yeah, it'll be interesting. 2014, it's happening,
exciting
people.
Year.
Whether we like it or not. And I can't wait to see what happens in the topics that we're interested in over the next year. Amber, I know you're in Florida now, and you're going to have a nice New Year's down there. And mm-hmm. And I guess we'll have one show of 2014 at our normal time. It'll be our last show on Fridays, and then we move to Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Amber and I are both really excited about that. Amber, any final thoughts for our final show of the year?
I would just say excited about the time change for 2014. I think that the Thursday time slot is going to be awesome. And I think there'll just be a ton more to talk about. We'll keep getting great guests. And if our viewers or listeners have any suggestions, please just let us know and keep sending your feedback, your ideas, your tips, because we cannot cover the social world alone. It is too big of a job.
Exactly. We need all of you. So thanks, everybody, who've been watching and listening and helping us make our show each week and telling a friend about the show. Love y'all. From Twit World Headquarters, rounding out the year 2013 is coming to a close. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Florida. And we'll see you guys soon in 2014.
Woo-hoo! Happy New Year!